Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Ruiz out to get it. The throw from his knees. It's in time. And it's a no-hitter. Unbelievable. Ruiz and Halliburton.
Oh, Chase is going to keep going. And he's safe at home plate.
Wow.
Chase Utley, you are the man.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
Now batting for the Phillies, second baseman John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 223. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. And coming up, we're going to talk a lot about Manny Machado and Bryce Harper in the Phillies offseason. I'm going to get into if the Phillies don't land Harper or Machado, who are some of the other targets that they should go after? Also, given Manny Machado's heel turn in the National League Championship Series, I'm going to interview Mark Brown, the managing editor for SB Nation's Orioles site, Camden Chat. We'll learn a little bit more about Machado and his time in Baltimore. And I have got a big change of heart on Machado coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Plus, I'll give you some thoughts on the Major League Baseball playoffs as we have the National League and American League Championship Series both going at the moment. Plus, I will give you our stat of the week. But again, a reminder, everybody, if you haven't become a Patreon member of Hittin' Season, now's a great time to do that. I've got a brand new This Week in Phillies History up there right now where I broke down Game 4 of the 2008 National League Championship Series, the Matt Stairs home run game, of course. It's only for folks who are $5 a month tier members of Hittin' Season, so go to patreon.com/hittinseason. On the $10 tier, we offer a whole lot more than that, including my weekly newsletter that comes out on Monday mornings. So again, check out that website, patreon.com/hittinseason, and find out all the added benefits you get by becoming a Patreon member of the podcast. And most importantly, if you haven't done so yet, become a subscriber to the Good Fight podcast feed. It's free on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts. Just subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed, and you'll get both episodes of Hittin' Season every week, along with Continued Success and The Dirty Inning, and any bonus podcasts that we might do will also pop up there as well. But let's get on to the show, episode number 223. And I wish this was going to be a happier start to the show, because we have been anticipating this whole offseason the Phillies making a big move, signing either one of Manny Machado or Bryce Harper. And I had set my heart on Manny Machado because I feel like he is the more consistent of the two players. I like the fact that he plays above average defense and shortstop. And I'm sorry, I'm not buying defensive metrics from last year. I'm throwing them all out the window. I don't believe any of them. I believe the Phillies were a bad defense, but I also believe some things about certain players. I believe some of those numbers were skewed. And I think Manny Machado's dramatically deficient defensive numbers at shortstop were skewed. So I've always liked Machado. I mean, you look at his numbers this year, they're off the charts, and he's trending toward a Hall of Fame career, and now he's with the Dodgers playing in the NLCS against the Brewers. And I mentioned a heel turn for Machado right now. If you're not familiar with pro wrestling terms, that's a term we use whenever anybody turns from good to bad. And I don't know what is going on inside Manny Machado's head, but he has lost his mind in the NLCS. In games 2, 3, and 4. I wrote about this for The Good Fight, and the title of the piece was, "I Was Wrong, Manny Machado Is Not the Guy for the Phillies." And this goes against everything I believed in, because just on Tuesday, I wrote something talking about after Manny Machado's comments about hustling. I wrote so on Twitter, so neither Bryce Harper nor Manny Machado want to hustle. You know what? I was wrong. They're just not Philly. Got to go get Hunter Pence to make sure we have that hustle down. I was kidding around because I think people make too big a deal out of hustling in baseball. I don't get on guys when they don't bust out to first every single ground ball. I don't get on guys when they don't run with like their hair is on fire on every infield pop-up. I understand that frustration at failure is a part of the reason why some players jog down to first base. Some of it is laziness. But I don't think every player needs to be going all out 100% of the time, especially if you are a phenomenally productive player like Manny Machado. So in game two, when Machado failed to run hard down the first baseline on a routine ground ball to Orlando Arcia, and it prompted some on social media and on the TV broadcast to question his lack of hustle, I didn't have a problem with it. Machado, after the game, said he will, quote, never be Johnny Hustle, which those comments will live in infamy forever. That's a who for what comment right there. And that running down the line hard is not his, quote, cup of tea. And again, I largely dismiss that quote because this is not a big deal to me that a player runs hard every single time. But then in Game 3, we went a little bit beyond hustle, and we started to get into some areas of dirty play. Machado tried to break up a double play by sliding wide of the second base bag in clear violation of the Utley rule, which I think is admittedly a dumb rule. I think you threw out 100 years worth of baseball tradition because one guy got his leg broken in a fluke play. It wasn't a fluke accident, but a fluky play. But Machado tried to break up a double play by sailing very wide and reaching out his arms to slap at the legs of the fielder at the time who was trying to turn the double play. That's kind of a dirty play. And Milwaukee was upset by that play. And in the wake of the Johnny Hustle comments, it portrayed Machado in an even less than flattering light. And then finally in Game 4 on Tuesday night, things went a bit farther. As in the 10th inning, as Machado was running out, again, another routine grounder to, I believe it was shortstop, as he's crossing the first base bag in the 10th inning, he purposefully kicks the ankle and foot, or knocks ankles with Jesus Aguilar, the Brewers' first baseman, who is manning first base. And it was a dirty play. It was no need to make contact. Machado, and as Machado is crossing the first base bag, you can see his head look down. You can see him doing it on purpose. He was trying to initiate contact with Jesus Aguilar for whatever reason. I don't know why. But he does it knowingly. It wasn't a violent play, but it was intentional. It could have caused injury, and there was no good reason for it. I mean, you could at least argue that the slide was at least in the heat of the moment and that he's trying to make a baseball play, even if it was a little bit illegal. But there was nothing about the play with Aguilar that was anything other than Machado trying to kick Aguilar in the leg. That's it. And after the game, Brewers outfielder Christian Yelich, who does not have, he's not a strongly spoken guy, he called it a dirty play by a dirty player and then threw in F that mother effer, only he didn't shorten the words. Craig Counsell was asked if it was a matter of Machado playing too hard, and he said, I don't know, I guess they got tangled up at first base. I don't think he's playing that hard. Craig Counsell throwing shade at Manny Machado. And after the game, Machado said, he didn't deny it, he said, if that's dirty, that's dirty. I don't know, call it what you want. I play baseball. I try to go out there and win for my team. If that's their comments, that's their comments. I can't do nothing about that. I mean, what are you doing, man? When you take each of these things individually in a vacuum, they're not necessarily a big deal. But when you lump them all together over a three-day span here, Machado has been acting and playing like an ass. And it's got to give the Phillies pause about potentially signing him to a long-term contract worth $300 to $400 million. Now, he basically spawned a feud between the Orioles and the A's in a couple of games in 2014 when Machado was caught between second and third base as he was trying to advance to third, and he was tagged out a little aggressively by Josh Donaldson, but it wasn't anything crazy. And Manny Machado goes out of his way to make it look like Donaldson had hit him with a sledgehammer in the chest. And then 2 days later, after the Orioles are getting blown out, Manny Machado has a pitch in on him that he swings and throws the bat, which I believe was probably intended either for the A's pitcher, but it ended up going down the third baseline, Did he mistakenly think Josh Donaldson was in the game? Because Donaldson wasn't in the game at third at that point. Clearly, Machado is trying to send a message, chucking his bat at the Oakland A's fielders. And then you had an incident from 2016 where Yordano Ventura and Manny Machado got into a fist fight on the mound because of some back and forth between those two. I mean, this is just you factor all these different things in, and I think that, you know, when it comes to this, whoever it is the Phillies sign, whether it's Machado or Harper, you know, you basically have to ask yourself, is this the guy I want to give $350 million to? Is this the guy I want to make the face of the franchise for the next decade, given all this other stuff? Especially when you have Bryce Harper there. And Bryce Harper, people think Bryce Harper has an attitude problem. Bryce Harper does not have an attitude problem. He doesn't. He had the same kind of issues with hustling as Manny Machado has. Again, I'm not going to get on Bryce Harper for that. I think early in his career, Bryce Harper had an attitude problem. No doubt about it. He was a punk. In the beginning of his career, Bryce Harper was an entitled punk. But everything you hear out of Washington is that he's changed that. He's not that guy. I think this year was a tough year for him because he knew free agency was on the way. I think he was trying to justify the next contract that he's going to get. I think he psyched himself out. I think he got really frustrated, and he handled it in some very poor ways. And I'm not going to excuse it. And that gives me a moment of pause with Bryce Harper as well. Neither Harper or Machado are perfect 100% saints. But this stuff with Machado just rings of even more immaturity to me. And it's not, I don't want anybody to get the idea, because I've had a couple people say this to me, is that I'm a white guy criticizing a Latino guy for lack of hustle and not playing the game the right way. I have had just about every Latino player's back when that kind of nonsense is thrown at them. So don't bring that stuff into this house, okay? That's not going to play here. What Manny Machado has done these last 3 days have been the acts of a dirty player with a bad attitude, and I don't get it. You're playing in the National League Championship Series for the Dodgers. You know that the world is watching you. What are you doing? What are you doing? And so I have a worry about introducing Machado into a locker room with a bunch of young guys, none of whom have stepped up to the plate. Reese Hoskins is probably the one guy in the Phillies locker room who has taken on a leadership role. And I think he is probably the one guy that you could count on to lead the team. But none of the other guys have. I mean, Gabe Kapler is the face of the franchise right now. And so I'm not sure about bringing Machado into a locker room. If he was going into a team like the 2018 team where you already had strong leaders in there, where you had Utley and Ryan Howard and Victorino and Worth, it would be more understandable. It would also be more understandable if you had a guy like Charlie Manuel, a longtime manager, a grizzled vet who knows how to handle players, knows how to handle locker rooms. Charlie Manuel knew how to handle Manny Ramirez, and Manny was among the most difficult to handle ball players in the league at that time, as opposed to the embattled Gabe Kapler, who, again, Gabe Kapler is going to get an opportunity to manage again next year, and I hope he does really well, but he's got enough on his plate to worry about without having to try and, you know, coax Manny Machado into being the type of player that this team wants. And I think this team wants to have somebody who's more than just a guy who puts up home runs and RBIs. Maybe that's asking too much. But I don't know that it is of a free agent that you're going to give $350 million to, a guy that we have identified as having to be a part of the core. This is not a player that you're going to use to add to your core. He becomes the biggest part of the core. And that's what gives me a moment of pause with Manny Machado, to the point where I'm out on Manny Machado. Unless I see something to turn things around, and I don't know what that would be, but unless I see things to turn that around, I would much rather have Bryce Harper. I would much rather have Bryce Harper. So that's where we are with Manny Machado. And I'm going to talk with Mark Brown from the Orioles SB Nation site Camden Chat here in just a minute so we can talk a little bit more about Machado and some of the incidents I briefly mentioned just a second ago. And then after that, we're going to talk about, well, let's say they don't get Machado and they don't get Harper. Well, then what? What do they spend their free agent money on? Do they put it in their pockets until next year? It is interesting that a lot of the guys in the Phillies front office were with the Orioles during Machado's early years when some of this other stuff was going on. Maybe that's why you've heard the Phillies so effusive about Bryce Harper and pretty mum about Manny Machado. And most people seem to believe that Machado's going to the Yankees anyway. So it's probably all a moot point, but maybe not. If the Phillies really wanted Manny Machado more than anybody else and ponied up the dough, I'm pretty sure Manny Machado would seriously consider it and may come. And look, I'm not looking for reasons for the Phillies not to sign Manny Machado. 2 days ago, I was all in, okay? I'm not trying to find ways to keep him off this team. I know how important it is for the Phillies to get one of these two generational talents. These guys are special. I understand that. These guys are potential future Hall of Famers. I get it. I don't want to not have Manny Machado. But unless something else comes out, unless something else happens over these next few weeks, and it kills me to say it, I love the talent, I think the Phillies should stay away from Machado this winter, unless it's on a much shorter than expected, much cheaper deal where you're not locking yourselves in for 10 years. It kills me to say that because I would love to have Manny Machado on this team. But as of right now, count me in on Team Bryce Harper.
This ball is out of here!
And joining me to talk a little bit more about Manny Machado is somebody who has watched Manny Machado for the first 7 years of his career. Our good buddies over at SB Nation's Orioles site, Camden Chat. Mark Brown wrote a terrific piece for them today, kind of chronicling some of the more controversial moments of Machado's tenure in Boston. You can follow, by the way, Camden Chat on Twitter, at Camden Chat. Mark, thanks for coming on Hitting Season. How are you?
John, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me tonight.
Absolutely. And this is... you know, before this week, I had been of the opinion that I wanted Manny Machado more than Bryce Harper or anybody else on the free agent market this year because of what he was able to do during that 7 year run in Baltimore. I mean, he's easily one of the 10 best position players in baseball. It sure seems like, barring injury or something catastrophic, he's on a Hall of Fame track. But you wrote about the drama that surrounded Machado during his time with the Orioles, and it doesn't sound as if you're all that surprised by what you've seen from him in the NLCS, are you?
Well, you know, it's funny because I guess I'm not surprised, but I kind of thought that he was beyond the stuff that we've seen from him in the National League Championship Series, because it was really earlier in his career where he was more into some of that stuff. I mean, you can go back to like 2014, where he just basically created his own beef with the Athletics, where he got like offended that Josh Donaldson tagged him quote unquote too hard when he was running from second to third. And I mean, you could go back, it's ridiculous. I went back and looked at the video just today because all this shenanigans from the NLCS made me think of it, and it's absurd that Donaldson just like tags him normally as a third baseman would tag a runner who's going by, you know, to do a double play. It was exactly what happened. And Machado like flops down like a caricature of a European soccer player, and he's like throwing his helmet, and he gets up and he's yelling, and it's just so absurd. So, you know, 2 days later, the Athletics throw at Machado because, of course, that's what baseball players do because they're dumb.
Right.
And then like the next pitch, Machado swings very late at a pitch that's inside and throws his bat, and the bat ends up sailing towards third base. And the Orioles were losing 10-0 in that game, so Donaldson wasn't even there anymore. So, like, if he was trying to throw it at Donaldson, I don't know. So, I mean, that was 4 years ago, and it was like, oh, well, you know, he's just 21, he's young, he's immature, and now here we are, and we're 4 years later, and he's 26 years old, and it just made me feel like, wow, man, I don't know that anything has really changed in that time after all.
Well, that's why I was surprised, because I haven't heard anything about Machado since those incidents. You know, it seems as though it had been pretty quiet, that he was a guy who played the game, quote unquote, the right way, whatever the hell that means. But that's, of course, the old timers term for, you know, not throwing your bat at people when you get pitched inside. And, there was a big brawl that he got into with Yordano Ventura after he believed Ventura was throwing too inside to him. I believe that happened in 2016. And then that escalated into a fight between those two guys after Ventura did end up drilling him in the side after Machado was staring him down on a flyout. So, you know, I hadn't really, you know, when I've been talking about Manny Machado, it hadn't occurred to me that there might be some of these issues with Manny because it's kind of gone under the radar the last few years. But, you know, having all of this come to the surface now has kind of soured me on Machado big time. And for somebody who covers a team that has a lot of young players in it, that has a lot of guys who haven't really stepped up to the plate to be a vocal leader on the team. And if you sign Machado to a big, huge deal like this, you're basically asking him to be a cornerstone franchise player. All of this stuff from this week, coupled with some of the stuff from his time in Baltimore, kind of seems to me that as if that would be the wrong choice. What do you think?
My personal opinion is if there's teams out there that are looking at Machado because of some of this stuff and thinking that they're not going to sign him, I think that's probably really short-sighted of those teams. I think anything that he brings on the field is just going to make the occasional stuff worth it. Because, I mean, it's been a lot in this NLCS, and that's pretty weird, actually. But other than that, I mean, it's maybe like at most a couple small little things a year, because you'll just have maybe in a town like Philadelphia, you're going to get all the columnists getting on him because he doesn't hustle enough, as, of course, one of the things in this Brewers-Dodgers series is
the Johnny Hustle comments.
exactly, the Johnny Hustle thing. And, I mean, you know, that's not a surprise to an Orioles fan either, because there's certainly a few plays a year where it's like one of those where he doesn't run out of grounder and then the fielder bobbles it. And then, you know, he would have been safe if he'd made even like a 80% effort to get down the first baseline. And he didn't do that much, you know, but I mean, I think it's easy for people who aren't professional athletes to complain about that stuff when you don't really know what it takes on the body you don't know what it takes to run down the first base. You don't want guys blowing out their hamstrings either.
Yeah.
You know, I think for Machado, and especially we've seen really the one concern I would have had if I was a team was his defense in Baltimore. And I don't know if you were familiar with what they had said about him in the Athletic last week, where basically it was saying, well, he had these bad defensive numbers in Baltimore. And maybe the actual reason for that is that the Orioles front office was stuck in like 1980 and they're not using any of these modern analytics to help position players better and have them in a position where they can actually field the balls that are hit in play. And, you know, the Dodgers maybe are just way better at that. So maybe that means Machado can still be a shortstop. And, you know, he's going to post, for the season, he had a 367 on base percentage, slugged 538, 37 home runs. I mean, if you're going to get that out of your shortstop for the next 4 years or so before he starts declining, that's probably worth the big expenditure, you know, as long as you've got a team that's ready to make that leap and is going to be good for the next few years. I mean, I wish the Orioles were that team and had that kind of money, but after 47-115 season, they're sure not.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a little bit of a haul for the Orioles here coming up over the next few years. But no, I'll, in full disclosure, I wrote a piece saying that I didn't think the Phillies should sign Manny Machado after all of this, because I don't want a guy who is outward. And again, when he first said the Johnny Hustle comments, I didn't really have a problem with it, because I agree with you. I don't think it's fair to expect a player to bust his butt down the line every single time. You can't expect that kind of 100% hustle rate from every single guy. There are some guys who can naturally do that, and that's fine. But, Jimmy Rollins had that problem in Philadelphia. We've heard about problems with that with Odubel Herrera, and it's unfounded, you know, a lot of times. And so that I don't care as much about. But when you're talking about a guy, in my opinion, who is flat out just saying, yeah, I'm not going to hustle, I'm not the hustle guy. And then, you know, when you've got some of these slides into second base that have also taken place in the NLCS, when now you've got this Utley role and you've got Machado going way out of his way to try and take out infielders who are clearly, they're not expecting it now because this rule's in place. And then you've got the incident where he kicks Aguilar's ankle as he's running by first base. All of these things come together now to form a narrative, which again makes me nervous as a guy who wanted Manny Machado desperately here in Philadelphia. It's a combination of all these things being gathered together that this heel turn by Machado in the NLCS has got me spooked.
I mean, yeah, it's certainly the idea of your favorite team spending whatever $1 million, you know, hundreds of million dollars that Machado is going to get because he's such a talented player and a young player hitting free agency. I mean, you know, that should make a fan nervous because just the history of these huge contracts just seems like, man, it just eventually it's going to burn the team. I can certainly understand that, but I think Machado is probably going to play well enough that, especially if he's on your team, you know, 160 games a year or whatever. I think this is my experience as an Orioles fan. You will quickly put the minimal incidents, just chalk them up to whatever, and be like, man, hit me some dingers, make me some great plays in the field, and you know what, it's okay. I mean, I don't think he's going to be one of these guys where, you know, he gets the contract and suddenly his numbers aren't as good. I think he's just looking to power his way up through baseball's record books even. And, I mean, you know, you mentioned maybe he's on a Hall of Fame track if he keeps performing at the level he's doing. And, you know, I've certainly never spoken to the guy, but I think he would probably like to carry on being a top-flight player and not just kind of cash the checks.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I know some of the criticism is the exact opposite. Some of the worry is the exact opposite. And you've seen it from baseball executives. You know, the national writers, you know, tweet the stuff out and write the stuff out and worry that a guy like Machado, who has lapses when it comes to running hard, and I don't know whether or not he's a quote unquote dirty player or not, but there are, I know some in baseball who now are calling him a dirty player, and that when he gets his money, it's the motivation isn't going to be there for him anymore. And I don't know that that's true, because I've never talked to Machado either. I think that's an easy thing to put on a player and say, well, once he gets paid, he's not going to play hard. You know, Machado's a professional. He's going to go out and he's going to play hard to the degree that he can play hard. But I wonder how much is in there for Machado. And specifically for the Phillies, I think for a team like the Yankees, they can take on Machado in a way that I don't think the Phillies can. Not in terms of money, because I look at a Phillies roster that has one player, a position player, Rhys Hoskins, who really I think has proven to be a halfway decent star player. I think there's still a lot of room for growth with Hoskins, but he's also the only guy in that locker room to step up and be a vocal leader. And so one of my big concerns is Machado coming into a really young locker room like that with the big contract, knowing that now he's the face of the franchise, and maybe taking some of the other players in a direction that the team doesn't want them to go. I imagine that the Phillies would like, if they're going to spend money, $350 million on a cornerstone franchise player, they also want to have some intangibles that go along with it to make it so that they don't have to basically say, well, listen, Manny's Manny, a different set of rules apply to him. I would imagine they want a guy who's gonna kind of rally the team together. And I don't know maybe you have a better insight on this than I do, of his time in Baltimore, how did his teammates like him? Was he well liked by his teammates? Did teammates have his back, or was there ever friction between him and his teammates publicly in the public domain? Obviously, we don't know on the inside.
I can't think of any time that there was ever any, like, private sniping about Machado. And, for instance, Machado and Jonathan Scope, who the Orioles also traded in July, who were the shortstop, second base, double play combo, those guys had, like, a legendary friendship for several years. So it's not like he was just, like, aloof and above everybody in the locker room. You said a lot of stuff about, well, would he be able to step up and be a leader? And that's one that I don't know is answered as much, because although Machado was definitely the best player on the Orioles for the last few years of his tenure, I would say the team leader was Adam Jones.
And yeah, for sure.
So, you know, if you're saying, well, what's it going to be if Machado goes somewhere and he's like the guy? I mean, I don't know that even Machado knows how he's going to respond to that kind of thing. So, you know, again, if you're looking for a reason to be nervous, I mean, I guess that's it. It's going to be like, I mean, you know, you mentioned New York. There's a lot going on there. Everybody's going to be like, oh, man, Giancarlo Stanton, Aaron Judge. You know, if the Yankees open up the checkbook and pay Machado, he's just one more guy that's in this, you know, collection of just legendary players.
Right.
And, you know,
he can kind of fade into the background a little bit behind a lot of those guys, too, you know.
Right, like if he has an 0-for-4 night and, you know, either Judge or Stanton could hit like two dingers and the Yankees still do whatever and nobody's going to be at Machado's locker, being like, man, why'd you go 0-for-4 tonight? You know, I imagine that's going to be a bit of a different scenario in the Phillies. Although I don't want to disparage your team too much. I just,
no, it's fair.
You
yeah.
Know, I don't think you have anybody quite on that level to kind of take the heat from Machado, so to speak. So,
no.
I mean, if that's something, you know, people want to be concerned about, I'm sure that's something that the front office there will be thinking about, but, I don't know. Just to go back, I feel like if you just want to psych yourself out of Machado based on all this this off the field, you know, mental stuff, I mean, I think the team that does that is probably making a mistake.
Well, that's fair enough, and that's why I wanted to have you on to talk about it a little bit, because you saw a lot more of him than any of us had, me broadcasting or anybody listening to this podcast. So, Mark, I appreciate your insights. Mark Brown, managing editor for SB Nation's Orioles site, Camden Chat. Follow the site on Twitter, at Camden Chat. Mark, thanks so much for coming on Hittin' Season. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
This ball is out of here!
All right, well, let's just say that the Phillies don't sign Manny Machado, and let's say they don't sign Bryce Harper. And if we're being honest with ourselves, the odds are probably better than not that the Phillies don't get either guy. If you had to put money on it, if you had a gun to your head and you had to put $1,000 down, your last $1,000 on do the Phillies get one of those guys or do they get neither, I think you probably have to put your money down on getting neither. But I do think there's a very good chance they get Bryce Harper. I think that's the guy they want. But let's just say they don't. Let's just say they don't. Where else would the Phillies spend their money in free agency this winter? Well, there's a couple different options. You could turn your attention to starting pitching. And there are some good options at starting pitching. You've got Patrick Corbin, a 6-win pitcher this year who's just 29 years old. Again, I mentioned last week on the podcast, I think he is going to the Yankees. I don't think that he's going anywhere else. I think he wants to go to the Yankees, and the Yankees need starting pitching more than they need offense. So I think that's where Corbin is going. But you have Dallas Keuchel, who I also said last week is not, I think, ideal for the Phillies unless their defense drastically improves next year. But he's kind of a nibbler. Was a 3.5-win player this year. He's 31 years old, but he is a left-hander, and I think he's a lefty that will age well because he's not a flamethrower. But he's a guy who needs a lot of contact, who relies on contact, and so you better have a better Phillies defense behind him if you're going to sign a guy like that. Clayton Kershaw can opt out of the 2 years and $65 million remaining on his contract. He's 31, was a 3.5-win player, had a great Game 5 of the NLCS against the Brewers after a rough Game 2, I believe it was, against Milwaukee. No, it was Game 1. Game 1 against Milwaukee, he had a rough go of it. Jay Happ is also on the block, on the free agent heap, a 3.2-win player. He's 36. I think all those guys are attractive because they're left-handed. That's a lot of left-handed starters. And I think the Phillies will probably get, well, I think they could very well get one of them. I think Charlie Morton would be interesting, a 3-win pitcher. 35 years old, but he's still in the prime of his career, man. He is just rolling right along for the Houston Astros. David Price, a 2.7-win pitcher, 33 years old. He can opt out of the 4 years and $127 million remaining on his contract, but I don't think he'll get a deal better than that on the free agent market. And then you have Nathan Eovaldi, a hard-throwing 29-year-old, 2.2-win player, right-hander, throws really hard, has been pretty good for the Red Sox, but I'm not as enamored with him. There's some other guys, too. You could also make a trade. I also advocated, as part of my overall plan last week, for the Phillies to trade for Madison Bumgarner. I think that makes all the sense in the world, depending on the price. And so I think the Giants would be foolish not to look at moving Madison Bumgarner. I mean, in their own division, you have the Diamondbacks, who are closer to contention, saying they're looking to unload their players. And you could see the Phillies go after Zach Greinke, or the guy that I would love to see them go after is Robbie Ray, their left-hander, who had a rough year ERA-wise, but I think has phenomenal stuff and should have a big bounce-back season in 2019. Would love to see the Phillies make a deal for Robbie Ray. All right, looking at another area they could move is closer. They could look at Zach Britton, of course. If you're not going to spend big money on one of those two offensive players, you could spend big money on the best left-handed reliever on the market. Adam Ottavino is 33 years old, a 2-win player. He'd be a very good addition to the bullpen. You've got Jeurys Familia, David Robertson, Craig Kimbrell, Oliver Perez and Tony Sipp are two left-handers that if the Phillies are looking for left-handed specialists, each were both about a one-win player, which is good for a middle reliever. Oliver Perez, 37, Tony Sipp, 35. I mentioned Sipp on last week's podcast as well. He is a real Jekyll and Hyde guy from year to year, very erratic. Had a good year this year for Houston, so you worry that next year is going to be one of those five ERA-type seasons, but I think the Phillies will make a move for a relief pitcher for sure, and probably a left-handed reliever, if not a right-hander like Bud Norris, who specializes in getting left-handers out. As far as outfielders are concerned, if you're not going to get Bryce Harper, here are the other options. And I recommended that if the Phillies signed Manny Machado, then they should also sign Michael Brantley. I think Michael Brantley would still be the outfielder that I would target if I were the Phillies. Then the Phillies desperately need help in the outfield. Michael Brantley has had injury concerns over the last 2 years coming into 2018, but this year was healthy, played over 145 games, had a three and a half win season for Cleveland, 32 years old, signed him to a three-year deal. I think you're getting some very good offensive production. He's a high average, high on base guy with some decent pop. A.J. Pollock is a guy, 31 years old, also has had a lot of injury concerns over the last couple of years. It was a 2.5 win player this year, but does play outstanding defense. He can play center field, and I think that he does have a very good bat in there when he's healthy. And so I think Pollock could be a good bounce back candidate as well. Marwin Gonzalez plays some outfield. He also plays third base. He's a guy you could move all over the place. Another guy I recommended the Phillies sign this offseason. An interesting guy to think about, and I don't think he's going to opt out of his contract, is Jason Hayward, who has 5 years and $106 million remaining on his contract. Still just 29. Had a much better year this year for the Chicago Cubs. But I don't think he's going to opt out because, again, I don't think he gets better than 5 years and $106 million. Another guy the Phillies could consider is Carlos Gonzalez, who had a decent season in Colorado, a 1.7 win season for him, 33 years old. If you're looking at infielders, the pickings are real slim. Third base, if you believe Josh Donaldson's year this year was bad because he just couldn't get healthy, and that after a full offseason of getting healthy and getting back in baseball shape that he's going to return to being a perennial MVP candidate, then maybe you give Josh Donaldson a 1 or 2 year deal. And maybe a 3 year deal for Josh Donaldson. If you get a good physical from him, and if you believe that he's going to come back and be the type of player he used to be, Josh Donaldson could be a terrific addition to the infield. But again, the jury is still out on all of that. Now, those are the free agents. Aside from trading for a starting pitcher like Bumgarner or Greinke or Robbie Ray, those were all free agent options offensively. If you're looking at trades, here are some guys to keep in mind. If the Diamondbacks really are selling everybody, then maybe the Phillies could inquire about getting Jake Lamb off their hands. Some other big bets. Paul Goldschmidt. The Diamondbacks say they are willing to listen for deals on Paul Goldschmidt. I don't know what that price tag would be, but he's not young anymore. He's in his early 30s, and the Phillies already have a bunch of first basemen. They already have Justin Bour, Carlos Santana, and Rhys Hoskins. Now, a couple of those guys can play in different places. I think the Phillies will try and trade Justin Bour, maybe a move Justin Bour to Arizona in a deal, just as part of a Goldschmidt deal, so they can stick somebody at first base who's cheap and can provide some decent production, at least slugging-wise. And maybe that's part of the exchange. You bring Goldschmidt in, you could play Rhys Hoskins in left field, and you could play Carlos Santana at third base. Offensively, at third base and left field, you're not making yourself any better next year than you were this year. The idea, I think, is to get Rhys Hoskins at first base, but I really want to get Rhys Hoskins out of left field. I don't know if Paul Goldschmidt can play left field, if he can play anywhere other than first base. That would have to be a question that the Phillies would ask, what his flexibility would be moving off of first base. But Paul Goldschmidt would certainly give this team the big bat in the middle that they were missing. It would be a huge addition offensively. And so, again, I'm kind of tired of trading defense for offense, but in this case, I don't know. If it's Paul Goldschmidt, maybe you pull the trigger on that. A guy for the Kansas City Royals whose name surfaced in trade rumors was Whit Merrifield during the trade deadline had a 5-win season for Kansas City. He's 29 years old, but he is under team control for a long, long, long time, and he's very cheap. I think the Royals would move him, but you would have to give up the farm for him. He might cost you Sixto Sanchez. And I like Whit Merrifield. I like what he gives you defensively. I like what he gives you with batting average and stolen bases. He's proven to be a very good and very consistent player for the last 2 years, but I'm not sure that I'm giving up that much for him. But if you're looking for a way to improve your average and your defense in the outfield and get some speed and get some athleticism on this team, a couple of things this team dearly needs, Whit Merrifield would match this team perfectly. It just really depends on what the asking price would be. Nicholas Castellanos would be a terrific addition from Detroit. A 2.9 win season for him. He's just 26 years old, third baseman, right fielder. Kind of a guy who's going to start to get a little bit more expensive for the Tigers over these next few years. Detroit in the past has run high payrolls, but as they're rebuilding, they may not want to do that with Castellanos, and they might decide they want to get rid of him, bring in some young talent instead of Castellanos. Again, he would probably cost you Adonis Medina, if not more. But he might be a guy that the Tigers are willing to move because he is going to start getting a little bit more expensive here as he gets older. Jose Abreu from the White Sox, the first baseman, had a down year. 22 homers, 1.2 win season, hit just 265, 325 on base, 473. Doesn't play great defense at first base. I don't think you could move him to another spot. So like Paul Goldschmidt, you probably are putting Carlos Santana at third, Rhys Hoskins in left, and I don't know that Abreu gives you the kind of offensive production that makes that trade-off worthwhile. You could trade for Joey Gallo. I think the Texas Rangers would probably make Joey Gallo available. He had another big home run season, put up a nearly a 3-win season, all because of power. And my guess is the fact that he is so one-dimensional that the Rangers would be willing to move on from him. He will also start to get a little expensive in terms of arbitration. Might not be the Rangers' cup of tea for a player with the limited skill set that Gallo has. I wouldn't love this deal either. I think Gallo's power production is great, but I don't want that kind of a one-dimensional player on this team. The Phillies need to get more athletic. They need to get some defense as much as they need power, and Joey Gallo just doesn't seem to fit the bill. I will tell you one guy with the Diamondbacks that I would very much like to see the Phillies pursue is outfielder David Peralta. He destroyed the Phillies this year in the two series that he played against them, especially the one in Arizona. Peralta's a really talented player. Again, he's a guy that would cost the Phillies something. It would not come cheap, but Peralta is a guy, if you're not going to sign Bryce Harper, you're not going to sign Manny Machado, that's a guy that I could easily see the Phillies making a push for. So you've got some options here. There are some other things that the Phillies can do in terms of improving this roster for next season. The trades are not going to come cheap, but don't just look at the free agent market. There will be other players, others than the ones I've mentioned, who will probably pop up and get traded at the winter meetings. It always happens. Guys you wouldn't think about end up getting traded at the winter meetings during the course of the offseason. Sometimes deals are just too good to pass up. And so we'll see what the Phillies end up doing here this offseason. They are going to reload in some spots, and hopefully they reload with Bryce Harper. If it's Manny Machado, if the Phillies sign Manny Machado, I will get excited about it because of the talent, because of the ability, and I will just pray and cross my fingers that it doesn't blow up in their faces. But in case Plan A and Plan B don't work out, those are some of the other names to keep an eye on this offseason.
This ball is out of here!
Well, a couple quick things about the League Championship Series before we wrap up. I got to be honest, I haven't really loved the baseball playoffs this year. I just haven't been enjoying the postseason as much, and mostly it's just because I think a lot of the conversation around baseball, so much of it is, why is the sport broken? What is wrong with the sport? And I've seen a lot of things that I don't like about baseball here over these last few weeks. The first thing is the commercial breaks are longer during the postseason, so the games are going a lot longer. We've seen a decent amount of bullpenning this year. I'm going to get into that in just a second. And frankly, we've seen a lot more drama off the scoreboard than on it with all the Manny Machado stuff and some of the, all the replays that we're seeing. And, the stuff with the Astros that was going on over the last couple of days. And more than that, I think, we've just, the game before these last couple of years just had a different rhythm to it. Baseball does not seem to have any rhythm to it anymore. you'd get into a game, you'd have the starting pitchers going, teams would feel each other out, you'd move into the middle innings, you know, it'd be time, you know, trying to get the starters out to get to the soft underbelly of the bullpen, and then if you had to get to the back of the bullpen and you had the real strong relievers back there, that's when you had to worry. Teams you knew would be able to put the ball in play, move runners over, you'd see some action on the field. And really what the Major League playoffs has been this year is home runs, a lot of relief pitchers, and a lot of strikeouts. That's what the baseball playoffs have been. And I have been grumbling at announcers who have done nothing but bemoan the state of baseball. And baseball is still the best sport in the world to me. But I just haven't enjoyed the postseason. I'm having a really hard time sitting down and watching all four and a half hours of a baseball game. A lot of them are starting late. Some of them don't end till midnight, 1 a.m., and I just can't stay up for them. I know a lot of you can't either. But there's also a couple of things that about the playoffs that I wanted to mention. The first thing is this Houston Astros thing, where you had this Astros employee who was booted out of an area near the Boston Red Sox dugout before Game 1 of the American League Championship Series. Turns out the same guy, Jeff Passan from Yahoo Sports, identified the guy as Kyle MacLachlan, was removed by security during the American League Division Series as well by the Indians. Apparently this guy's sitting here with his cell phone and taking pictures of the Boston dugout. And Cleveland alerted Boston to this guy and said, hey, be on the lookout for this. Keep an eye on this. You know, if this guy's there, if you see somebody doing this, we think this is the Astros stealing signs or trying to get inside information. Cheating, in other words. Well, on Wednesday, Major League Baseball issued a statement saying that they had looked into the incident, they had done an investigation, and basically decided that the Astros weren't cheating. They were just trying to make sure the Red Sox weren't cheating, because we remember, was it last year or 2 years ago, where the Red Sox were accused of using an Apple Watch to spy on the Yankees pitchers and relay signs to hitters. And, you know, we've heard whispers about sign stealing from the Astros going back to last year's World Series. The Oakland A's complained to Major League Baseball that the Astros were stealing signs by clapping hands and banging on trash cans to signal hitters what pitches were coming. And frankly, this does feel like Major League Baseball sweeping this whole thing under the rug. They just don't want to deal with it. And until they deal with it, this kind of stuff is going to continue to go on. But, you know, teams have been trying to steal signs forever. Remember, the Phillies were caught up in something like this. Remember Binocular Gate back in 2010? Cameras caught Phil's bullpen coach Mick Billmeyer using binoculars from behind the center field wall. It was in Denver, I think it was. Yeah, it was in Denver. That's right. And Rockies manager Jim Tracy said he thought the Phillies were trying to steal signs, and the Phillies, of course, denied it. Charlie Manuel said that Billmeyer was using binoculars to observe Carlos Ruiz's stance and framing of pitches. However, multiple Rockies players said that they noticed, or they mentioned something to Rockies pitching coach Bob Apodaca, and Apodaca noted the binoculars in the first inning while the Phillies were batting. So a player asked the Fox Sports News crew to zoom in on the Phillies' bullpen and center field, and they confirmed the binoculars, and the crew chief asked the Phillies to stop, and they did. But after the game, Manuel said, "I'm sure if they could steal signs, they would. And if we can, we will too, if we get them legally," Manuel said. "If you're dumb enough to let us get them, it's your fault. It's been going on in the game for a long time. If you're dumb enough to let us get them, that's your problem." Now, the Phillies swore up and down they were not using binoculars to try and steal signs. But Manuel is talking about legal sign stealing. Like, if you're able to decipher based on the third baseman's motions, or if you're able to, you know, basically see if a pitcher is tipping their pitches, that's legal. If a team is doing something in a way, if a hitter at second base, frankly, if a runner at second base is able to decipher the signs that the catcher is putting down, I don't have a problem with that. That takes brain power. That takes ingenuity. I'm fine with that, but using technology and using other people, employees of the team or people who are associated with the team from the stands relaying information, that's wrong. You can't do that. Major League Baseball has to put the hammer down on that, and I don't think they did with this statement. I think the Astros and every other team in baseball, though, are going to try to continue to exercise every edge that they can. Speaking of exercising every edge that they can, in the NLCS, there was an interesting subplot for Game 5 between the Brewers and the Dodgers. Milwaukee starter Wade Miley started the game, and he was going on short rest. a left-handed pitcher. The Dodgers then countered by going with a straight right-handed heavy lineup. Well, folks, it was all a ruse. Craig Counsell, the manager of the Brewers, came out and removed Miley after one batter, a walk, and then brought in Brandon Woodruff to start what was going to be a bullpen game. Miley is going to start game six. And so they brought Miley out just to pitch to one batter, so that would force, in the hopes that the Dodgers would put in a lineup that was all right-handed, or had as many right-handers in it as possible. And it worked. It was an abbreviated and kind of a bastardized version of the opener, in which he then tried to take advantage of the platoon splits by running a bunch of right-handed relief pitchers out there. Unfortunately for Milwaukee, it didn't work. The Dodgers won 5-2 to take a 3-2 series lead, but it was a savvy move, especially if you're going up against a pitcher like Clayton Kershaw and you're the Brewers and you don't really have anything at your disposal. Their starting pitching is extremely weak. And now the Brewers will use Miley for Game 6 to try and save their season. But I did notice a couple of people online wondering about the ethics involved in fooling the Dodgers like that. And I saw some people, I mean, I saw Gabe Kapler was asked about it, about the opener earlier this year, and was asking basically if there was anything unethical about the opener, basically by snookering a team into putting out a lineup with the express reason of then bringing in a relief pitcher after one inning to take advantage of those platoon splits. And Kapler said, "You don't have to get a lineup to the opposing team at any particular time. When you walk up to the plate to the umpires with your lineup card, that's the official time when you have to have your lineup in and who's going to start the game for you. I think there's a common courtesy to tell the opposing team who you are going to start. Now, I'm not sure why that's the case, and I'm not sure it makes the most sense. I guess it's like we have to prepare and you have to prepare, so help us prepare and we'll help you prepare. But I always wondered about that." So morally, I think Counsell falls into a gray area here, but this is more proof that the game is changing. And when you're in the playoffs, I can understand bullpenning a little bit more in the postseason, because in a situation like Milwaukee was facing, they simply don't have starting pitchers, especially, you know, Gio Gonzalez got hurt in game four. They don't have the horses, but they do have a strong bullpen. I don't like bullpenning. You know this about me. But I understand in this case it was something that was needed. And the more I have thought about the use of Wade Miley for one batter, it on its face it looks silly, but it is actually quite ingenious. It's actually a really, really smart move by Craig Counsell, who's doing everything he can to keep his Brewers in this series. The Brewers, you know, had home field advantage. They won more games than the Dodgers during the regular season. Nevertheless, I think we all know the Dodgers have the stronger team. And the Dodgers are now just one win away from going back to the World Series for the title since 1988. And the Brewers trying to get back to the World Series for the first time since 1982. I know the Brewers, of all the teams left in the playoffs, they're the ones I'm rooting for. But again, it's not a strong rooting interest. And maybe that's another reason why I haven't really gotten that into this postseason. There's just not a lot of teams left to root for me, and I imagine for you too as Phillies fans here as we watch the NLCS and the ALCS wrap up. We get the Fall Classic coming up here on Tuesday, I believe it is, but next week we get the Fall Classic. Is it Monday or Tuesday? The World Series is coming up. I don't know. But we'll get the World Series next week after these LCSs all wrap up. I believe it's Tuesday, and the Fall Classic, no matter who is in it, is always something worth watching.
This ball is out of here!
And now it's time for your stat of the week. The Good Fight's Ethan Witte, good writer for us, wrote about the Phillies' outfield this season and what a disaster it was, making the argument that Harper really should be the target this offseason anyway, given the need at outfield is probably more than the need at shortstop or third base. How bad was the Phillies' outfield? Well, if you use Baseball Reference's version of WAR, guess which player had the second best Baseball Reference wins above replacement on the team in 2018? The answer is Jose Bautista at 0.4 BWAR, tied with Roman Quinn, one-tenth of a point behind, Rhys Hoskins' 0.5 BWAR. Now, let's just talk about BWAR for a second. They're using defensive runs saved to calculate their defensive metrics, which factors into their wins above replacement. You can't tell me Rhys Hoskins was worth half a win more than a replacement-level player. I don't care how bad his defense was. So the BWAR numbers from last year, I just don't buy. I'm just not buying them. Nevertheless, Jose Bautista at 0.4 tied for second best among Phillies outfielders. He was only with the team for less than a month. He signed in August. Unbelievable. If you like Fangraphs, which I think is a little bit better, it's not a whole lot better. Bautista finished third at 0.6 behind Odubel Herrera at 0.9 and Rhys Hoskins 2.9 FWAR. That just goes to show you how tough, how bad, how rough the Phillies offense was in 2018. Folks, that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks once again to Mark Brown from Camden Chat for coming on the podcast this week. Again, if you haven't done so, gang, head on over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever it is, Stitcher, wherever it is you get your podcasts, and subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed. Please leave a review while you're there. Let me know what you think of the show. Also, sign up to be a Patreon member of Hittin' Season. Go to patreon.com/hittinseason and you'll get bonus podcasts, you'll get my weekly newsletter, and lots of other good stuff from Justin and Liz as well. Thanks everybody for tuning in. I'll talk to y'all next time right here on Hittin' Season.
I'm Michael Kist of Bleeding Green Nation, and I invite you, gentle listener, to join us for the best analysis of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles in the business. BGN Radio provides you with the most informative preview shows, and the Kist and Solak show dives deep into all the scheme and X and O details you could ever want. Plus discussions with the industry's brightest minds, including former NFL players, and press conferences from the Eagles coaching staff to keep you up to date and informed every step of the way. Subscribe to Bleeding Green Nation today. Fly, Eagles, fly.